Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Everybody, and thank y'all so much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, in the studio with me, I have a special guest. It's Calm Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios. It's a beautiful spring day, except for all the pollen, but I am surviving. If I sound a little nasally, I'm sorry, folks. I haven't been able to use my nose in like 3 or 4 days.
You mean more than normal?
I think I'm immune to Claritin. I've been taking it, and it's not doing anything. Like a heroin addict, I've become, like, I have to increasingly more and more and more of it toward to do anything.
Well, you did switch to orally taking them.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Just making sure.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's like there's like a new super pollen in my area, you know? And
super pollen.
We mentioned this before on a show.
Doing bumps of super pollen.
And I've received dozens of emails from people that'll listen to the podcast.
Wow. Well, it is pretty much.
And numerous people that are listening to us on YouTube, they've been telling me about like where we live is a bad area. They've been offering remedies like eating honey from your area and things like that. And I appreciate all of it. But I'm telling you, folks, I've tried all that. I've done it. I mean, like we mentioned on the previous show, like, I don't know why you live in an area you think you'd become immune to it.
Yeah. But the good immunity for you, which you could probably try, is death. I'm pretty sure that'll probably shut you up.
Right.
That's it. My wife was gone. They went to the coast, right?
Yeah.
They did their running around. Everything was great. Comes back. She said, literally, I'm an hour from the house, and it starts flaring up again.
And then they're leaving you again.
Yeah. Which I'm not complaining.
Hey, listen, seriously though. So I know several people listen to the show only through like their podcast app. If you want to help us out, go over to YouTube and subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Yeah, for real.
Now, I know it's the same show you've already listened to, but it helps us out. Like, we get people all the time asking, what can we do to help you out? Well, you can help us out by writing reviews. Wherever you listen, you can help us out by subscribing to our YouTube channel, things like that. Because you can look at all the followers we have on, say, one platform, and then you go look at YouTube and you're like, dude, this is only like 1/100th of the following you have on this platform. Go over there and help us out, right?
Well, we do have a face for radio. So, I mean, I do understand. I put just a lot of videos up of us talking because, look at us.
Yeah, I agree. That's why we do a podcast, right?
That's right.
And another thing is, I get lots of requests for people wanting to start their own podcast. If you have any technical questions or things like that, feel free to hit us up, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. I might not be able to tell you the best way, but I can tell you the way that we've been doing it for a decade now. So
I can tell you how not to do it.
There's way more ways not to do it.
That's right.
But check this out. Speaking of listeners, we have some of the best listeners, and I love it when they send us their stories.
I love it.
Check this one out. It says, help me, guys. I'm freaking out.
All right.
I just saw something I can't wrap my head around while I was driving home from work. I live in rural Wisconsin, but work in Madison. So it's about a half-hour drive home. We have a lot of deer up here, and so you definitely have to keep your eyes open for them when driving. Well, this morning, I was cruising along on my normal route home, and there's this stretch of road where you come over this little hill, and then about 100 yards away is a small bridge over a creek. It's wide open fields on both sides, and as I approach the bridge, I see this thing climb over the guardrail. So I slammed on the brakes. This thing was about 7 feet tall. It was all black and slimy looking. It was humanoid in that it had arms, legs, and a head. But it was really, really skinny. Although it had a head, there were no ears, nose, or mouth, just two large, round eyes that glowed with a yellowish amber color. I stopped about 100 feet away and it turned towards me. Even though it didn't have a mouth, I could hear a scream at me. A kind of roar sound, and I felt a massive wave of nausea hit me. Now, guys, I have had some seriously long nights of heavy drinking in my 50 plus years of life, and I have never felt nausea like that. I glanced at the passenger side floor of my truck thinking that I might puke. I'll aim it in that direction because it'll be easier to clean up. As I brought my eyes back towards the road, I see another one poke its head up. Holy cow, there's more than one of them. Just then, the first one takes two long steps across the road and over the guardrail on the other side, and it disappeared under that bridge. I sat for a second, just in shock, still resisting the urge to puke and trying to decide what I should do. If I back up, I have to go straight back toward the hill, or take the time to do a three-point turn because the darn road is too narrow to do a U-turn. So I decided to floor it. As I crossed the bridge, another wave of nausea hit, but I looked out of my window in time to notice the slimy footprint left by whatever the hell that thing was. I kept glancing in my mirror, and I didn't let off the gas for at least a couple of miles. I stopped alongside the road, jumped out, and gave in to the nausea. I cleaned up and drove home. But the whole way home, I couldn't stop thinking, what the heck was that? How many of them are there? Are they aliens? Are we being invaded? Or are they some kind of cryptid that's breeding here in Wisconsin? So guys, my question to you is, has anyone else seen anything like what I described? I've been listening to your podcast for a long time, and I know that if anybody would have heard about it, you would. I don't give a darn if you share this with your listeners or not. I just need to know if anyone else has seen them. I truly am freaking out. Thanks for being there. Sorry for the bizarre rambling. Dave. Well, Dave, emaciated, very tall, skinny-looking cryptids have been seen in and around roadways. I've not heard one a description quite like the one you gave, but it reminds me of an extraterrestrial that... There was a crash, much like the Roswell crash that happened in Brazil, I think in the early 90s. And there's a new documentary out about it. What's the guy's name? James Fox. In fact, he was just on Joe's show recently. But I'm familiar with the story that he did the documentary on. Anyways, when that spaceship crashed, there was some survivors. And about 7 days after the crash, these three girls happened upon and found this extraterrestrial, and it looked black. It looked slimy. They saw it in broad daylight, and they were able to get as close as 8 feet from it. They said it gave off a terrible smell, and one of the girls that made eye contact said that the thing wanted help. She could tell it needed help, but they just ran away. Well, apparently the Brazilian military was looking for this thing after the crash. They found it. They put hands on it, grabbed it, and took it to some doctors. And the guy that grabbed it died a couple days later. Apparently, a United States Air Force plane landed, put the thing on board, and took off. So, maybe this was another crashed alien, crashed UFO somewhere there in Wisconsin, and these aliens are roaming the fields looking for help. I don't know, but I think you did the correct move by gassing it and getting out of there, right?
For sure.
Are you familiar with that UFO
yes.
crash? Yeah, you've
yeah.
heard about it before. We've had lots of people... talk about us wanting us to do an episode on it. We just never have, but it's a famous case. It's like the Brazilian version of Roswell.
Speaking of, that's what I'll be covering this whole segment on. Will be strange UFO crash flap that happened right in that area from Roswell, all the way down from up there, down into Texas.
Yeah, there's been lots of crashes.
There's a lot of wild
stuff.
There's
the one at Cape Girardeau. Mm-hmm. There's been numerous crashes, even in the USSR and China and places like that. I mean, I definitely think that this has been an ongoing thing for a long time, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
just because your technology is amazing and you can create these crafts that fly off element 115, Moscovium, or whatever, doesn't mean that you're not susceptible to still pilot error. You could still be an amazingly smart, intelligent being and still make a mistake, right? Knock
yes.
over your drink. You steer the ship into the ground. Lightning. Heck, just people just shooting it. I mean, how many times we had stories where people see a UFO in a field and they all just start opening fire on it?
Well, that is us. That's why they don't get down here real close, right?
Like, I mean, complacency can run in all species.
Exactly.
I mean, once you get cocky and arrogant and easy and everything, you've done it so many times, you get complacent. That's when you spill that energy drink in the dashboard and you just nose off into Roswell, New Mexico.
I'm sure it's happened. I mean, somebody's got to learn. Like, maybe, you know, they're like, hey, Randy the alien's a terrible driver. He's just not good. He's busy texting or whatever, and he just takes his mind off of what he's doing and drives it into a mountain or
Why do we always think that they are all super intelligent?
I don't know.
Right? Like, there's probably intelligent ones, and then there has to be some dummies. There has to be some in there, like you said, that's like, do not let him work the retraction beam, right? Every time he does something, he's supposed to pick up the cow so we can cut its tongue out, and he ends up getting it halfway up and dropping it. Then we got to leave and go find another cow. Like, don't let him run it.
Right. And they may be super advanced in one area, but not in another. Like, you might have an alien version of Rain Man who can do crazy calculations, do all these things, but
he can't work the retraction beam.
It's not his thing.
And apparently, tongue and cow anus is a delicacy among them.
Yeah. Thank you for everybody forwarding the stories of the mutilations here in Texas. And a lot of people have sent the links to
that. And I love it.
You know, and when it comes to that stuff with the cattle mutes, as a quick side tangent before you tell us your story, is, you know, does it have to be aliens or could it be government? It seems almost like it's a human thing. They're extracting things or testing.
They can buy anuses and tongues.
That's true. That you think they could just buy their own cattle?
Well, why not just raise them yourself and do whatever you wanted to do behind closed doors?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. It's not my theory. I was just saying. It seems
what if
more
they're
human.
Not lifted up? What if they're done by Glimmer Men?
It's possible.
Even though they found no tracks, right? They're cloaked. Get a load of this, y'all. Lon sent me this. We had a little discussion about it. This may have been the first one I've ever heard of being this way. This comes from Pembroke Pines in Florida. He received this, fired it off. Listen to this. It says the date was the 24th of October, 2014. I was walking the dog around my Pembroke Pines, Florida neighborhood, and I came around the curve in the sidewalk, and I noticed something unusual, and I stopped walking, and then I just started staring at it. I was trying to figure out exactly what I was seeing. The dog seemed more annoyed that I'd made him stop, and he didn't bark or react in any way. This figure was ahead of me, about 30 feet away, standing in this swell area between the sidewalk and the street. It was not facing me, but it was skeletal thin, and it was bony and taller than my 5'3" frame. And it had white or light grayish skin and no hair.
Mm.
There was something blue near its left ear. Now, at first, I thought maybe it was a spiritual type of being, but clearly was not human. It sensed that I was staring at it. It looked over its right shoulder directly at me, and then looked down at the dog. Then it suddenly started to run into the middle of the street and then down the street into the next block. Its knees were backward. As it ran, it began to gradually fade, like the edges were the only part of it that I could see. It was glimmering and fading until I couldn't see it anymore. A friend suggested it sounded like an insectoid type alien or praying mantis alien. I'm in my late 50s. I don't drink or do drugs, and this is not a Halloween prank. I would really love to know if anyone knows what this might be, KL.
Hmm. Well, sounds like a Glimmer Man to me.
It does sound like one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, but here's the wild thing. Its legs were bent backwards.
Yeah, like Arrival.
The Arrival film. We don't see that in any other Glimmer Men. Right?
That's true. They still seem
to be humanoid. They seem to be walking around and all this stuff. I don't know, but it makes it feel more like it could be alien.
I definitely agree with you.
Or what if it's this, like we've said before? What if it's not a specialty outfit? It's not anything. What if these type of beings are around us all the time? Right?
We just can't perceive them.
And only when they glimmer is when we can start to perceive them. That it's not that they're hiding from us. It's that they're finally becoming visible. We can see their outline. We can see their presence or their essence that's there. That's what gives them away. We either see that. Less than that, they're there and we just have no idea.
You're freaking me out, dude.
Right? Yeah, that's what I wanted to do. So I hope you get freaked out enough. Let's take a quick break. When we come back from the break, like I said before, I'm going to be discussing some other odd crashes that happened in Arizona, Nevada, Texas, and New Mexico. So I hope y'all enjoy it. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
in to modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
All right, y'all, let's dive into this madness. I'm going to be talking about UFO flaps. And not the kinds on a UFO. If I could talk about those, y'all could look up and see me fly over your house, right? If I knew something about that. Or I guess I would be like locked into some basement, like under some military base, if you knew about UFO flaps. I'm just talking about a funny little timeline, right? Of like there's a whole bunch in this one area, in this one set amount of time. It's kind of strange what's going on there. So when we get these stories, and that's why I love the ancient history, love all the history stuff, is it's fun to put yourself or to imagine yourself being back in that time. And so I think about it like in, so let's start this off right, okay? Let's put ourselves back in 1947. It's right after the war. Everyone's home. Town's trying to get rolling again, right? I mean, this is the beginning of the baby boomers. This is when all this stuff starts kicking off. And I just think about what it would have been like as compared to the times now, you know, with the lack of communication. I mean, and really at the time it wasn't lack of, but compared to now it was almost non-existent, right? So now imagine you're an old rancher. You're hanging out there. You're 75 miles from Roswell, New Mexico. If you've never been to Roswell, I'd tell you, I think you should, and go to the UFO Museum and check it all out. It's enjoyable. It's great, especially if you're into this. And if you're listening to my voice, you're into this. It's probably something you should see. I mean, it's really neat. It's kind of like going to visit all these sites that you could go check out where there's, you know, these crashes, like Aurora's not far from us. Y'all know we talk about it all the time. It's fun to go see that. So now imagine you're a rancher. You're living out there. You're getting by in 1947, right? You probably had something to do with the war at the time. You were either in it or barely missed it, had family in it, something like that. I mean, it's still a big part of your life. But times are slower now. And you get up one morning. You stroll out to go to work. And you slide up to a pasture. You're going to check your sheep, right? You got a bunch of sheep out there. But you notice there's something laying out there, scattered about, hither and thither and yon, right? Turns out it's silver. You run out there, you start picking up all kinds of stuff. Imagine getting your mind blown. And in truly, it may not have really been mind blowing to Mac at the time, if he had had any kind of background or any kind of history of seeing all that. But I just think about what it would be like if something that devastatingly shocking happened to our brain now. Like if, let's say, if you woke up in the morning and it's just like Independence Day or just like, what is it called? Was it District 9? What is the one where they land, right? They look like insects. But they're everywhere. They live among us, right? Imagine how wild that would be if they all just showed themselves. And there they were. It would shake you. But now you're the only person that saw it. Now you're the only person there. So you do what you do. You go and you call the police and or the sheriff's department because you know them, right? You get a hold of them. They come out. And they got to go make a phone call. And they go back and call one of the local guys there, the military guys. Next thing you know, boom, it's there. It was so well picked up on that on July 8th, y'all don't forget, it was actually reported in the Roswell Daily Record, right? They had the whole headline. You can see it. The RAAF captures like flying saucer on ranch in Roswell region. That's what it says, right? And then the next day is when all of it starts down as, oh, sorry, that's a weather balloon. Right? Military guys show up and say, that's not, don't put that in the paper. That's a weather balloon. I need to put that in the paper, which I find really amusing because we talked about it not long ago by one of these UFOs that was recently shot down. And they said, it's a weather balloon. I'm like, really? Y'all are sticking to your guns all this time, right? I mean, we are really closing in on 100 years from this point, and y'all are still sticking with a weather balloon. I'm like, awesome. Okay, that's great. But it seems like after this thing, whatever it was that crashed there, whatever you want to believe it was that crashed there, it was from that moment when the military started perfecting the lockdown and retrieval, right, of downed anything. Whatever it is, they can get there, cord it off, lock it down, get it gathered up, get it covered, and get it gone better than anyone. So I put us back in 47. But you can go all the way back into the late eight or the early 1890s, because without this fella kind of peeled the top back on a lot of these crashes in the area that a lot of folks weren't aware of. And it didn't become more famous until, you know, within the recent years, 30, 40 years or so. And this is Frank Scully. Now, he's got a super long name. Frank Scully was a columnist and a writer and a journalist. He wrote for Variety magazine and all this. And this is back, like, I think Frank passed away in the early 60s, 62, 63, 64, somewhere around in there. But anyhow, that's what he did. He was a writer and all this stuff. And he got wrapped up in the UFO world. And he even wrote a book called Behind the Flying Saucers. And that book came out in 1950. And it was in there that there were a lot of these things that people found out later that didn't know, of course, that was going on. Like we've talked about this whole thing with Roswell. Don't forget, and we've even discussed it, did a whole segment on it about Aztec. Remember the Aztec New Mexico crash, if that's what it really was. There's a whole lot of stuff behind it, right? There is a lot of stuff of people talking about it. But if you want to read a cool book, Behind the Flying Saucers is a good book to keep in your collection. Round that up. It's really interesting. But he talks about that Aztec New Mexico crash. And of course, he did get a lot of his information from some guys that were a little nefarious, probably, or more than likely. But in that book, let's not forget that he claims that there was numerous crashes that happened in and around that time, from 47 to, I think, 48, 49, right around in there, and claims that there were four of them that it ended up crashing, that we retrieved. And then all in all, it believes no less than 34 bodies had been recovered out of all of this stuff and sent around to be studied and checked out. Now, of course, Frank said, look, this is what we're talking about. Frank talked about getting a lot of his information. And of course, you know, a lot of it, these guys are going to keep, back in the day, the journalists, you know, nobody talked about who they got their information from, but he talked about a couple of sources. You could easily, you probably remember it if you listened, but you can easily search it up. A fellow named Silas Newton. And that was, what was the other guy's name? Hold on here. Silas Newton and, oh yeah, Dr. Gee, right? That's Dr. Gee. Dr. Gee was a name that he had paintbrushed over several scientists that allegedly worked there. Okay, that was the whole thing. The whole thing with Silas Mason, though, was he turned out to be like a real turd. And it sounds like they were all like really skeevy con men that were kind of playing on Scully wanting this stuff to be true. But also it makes me think, why would you do it? Right? There's other stuff. Other people have talked about it. Other things have been found. What would have been the benefit if there's nothing going on? But I don't understand the benefit of conning a man other than just to get it put in a book back then if you're not going to get paid for it. Unless, of course, it's simply for disinformation, which we can't rule out, of course. But the story goes, of course, it crashed. They found this big intact thing down there and that they could get into it. There was a hole that had, like, I don't know if you want to call it like a door or what you want to call it on there, but they could get into it. And in there, they were like 16 small, charred, dead, humanoid-like creatures. And that instantly they loaded it all up. They got the bodies out and put them on a different truck. And that one took off. And then they got this on a truck and that one took off. And of course, it's allegedly went to the Wright Air Force Base there in Dayton, Ohio. That was supposed to be where they sent it all. And it falls in line. I mean, everything falls in line, makes sense. But like I said, some of the stuff was kind of crappy. You kind of be like, you know what? I don't think that guy's telling the truth, but who knows? And there's been a lot going on. Nick's written a good book about it. He's done a lot of work on it too, to look in there, and people will say it's a hoax. You look it up and all that. The Aztec crash was a full hoax, but others were like, no, it's actually real. And this whole hoax stuff is what's helped it stay covered up and that maybe they actually found more, learned more, retrieved more at that crash than they did Roswell, which would make sense of that whole thing. But again, back to Frank, back to Scully using his stuff in the 50s and all this book. Along in this book, too, we talk about one that came from Arizona in the 40s. This is 47. This is 3 months after Roswell. They had one in Paradise Valley, and it is a very interesting one. I like it because it involves hunters, right? And it makes sense to me. I will go ahead and share this one with you. It comes from a fella named Selman Graves. Selman Graves, he himself was a pilot, trained observer, right? Had his license, the whole thing. And he was a businessman. Well, Selman was the main guy involved in this. So, and it wasn't until, I believe, way later, I want to say like 40 years, almost 50 years later, that, no, I think it's like 40 years later that he actually spoke to someone that had actually worked back in the day with Frank, because Frank passed away in the 60s, but a fellow named Timothy Good, and Timothy had spoke to Selman about this whole thing, and they kind of spoke about it. But the story goes like this. Selman had a good buddy named Walt Sailor, and Walt owned some land up there, and they were all going to meet up and go hunting. When I say all, it's like Selman brought some buddies of his, Walt, you know, and all this, and they were going to land there and hang out at Walt's house and hunt. Being it's in October, it's got to be deer season, right? So I don't know what it was back then. I haven't looked into it, but I'm assuming mule deer, maybe whitetail. Maybe there was no season in Arizona back then. You know, I don't even know. This is a hot minute back, right? This is 47. So they show up there and they all meet up that morning. So it doesn't sound like it was an early morning gig. They all drive in and Walt's not there, right? They're going to hunt what's known as Paradise Valley is what they call this area. Walt's not there, so they wait a little bit. Walt finally shows up. He's like, hey, guys, I don't know where y'all were planning on hunting, but let me roll out the map here. Show me what you got going on. So they roll the map out on the hood of the truck. They're looking at everything, and he was like, this area, if we were planning on going there, it's restricted. He said, I just found out this morning that the Air Force is in that area, and you can't discharge weapons. So I'm like, okay, you know, no big deal. That's, you know, kind of weird, but okay. You know, that's it. All right. Everything goes on. They decide to go. Well, Graves, so I mean, he knew that area there by Paradise Valley, that there was a set of mine shafts that was up on one part of this hill. And that's where he wanted to go. He wanted to go check this area out. And part of me thinks he just wanted to get up there so he could get a good look off in that valley in case something was going on, right? Like, so he's like, look, we're not even going to take our guns. We'll leave our guns in the truck. We're just going to walk up there and look and glass, you know, get your binoculars out, look around. So that's exactly what he does. Him and two of his buddies head up that way. And they get up on top of the ridge. And from the ridge, he could see Walt's house. So he knew where Walt had to come from. And then he could also see where all the military was. And something out there, he said, looked like a large dome-shaped aluminum thing. And he said, this whole thing is roughly the size of the house. And he goes on to talk about that they were pitched tents, large wall tents set up all around it, large ones. So it looked like they were things going on there, right? Almost like a building, rather. Said, as this is going on, he can see people moving. There's men moving about. It's busy action, a lot of busy action. But he, again, keeps going on. He said, I thought it nothing, no big deal about it. It looked like nothing more than like a dome, an observatory that was built out there. And so he's probably thinking, you know, what are they looking at? You know, and we don't know. I'm assuming he was into this, the kind of UFO stuff. We don't know. And the reason I'm assuming is because of what we find later. So he sees all this stuff and then that's it, right? Like he's like, huh, no big deal. This is how it is. This is what's going on. We're not hunting over here. The military's got something, you know, set up. Years later, Graves comes across Mr. Scully's book, right? So he's reading Behind the Flying Saucers. And in that book, Scully's written about the Paradise Valley incident. And in there, he starts bringing up that it was a UFO crash. I can't imagine what it must feel like. For those of you that are listening that have heard stories about things that have happened to you, and you've never told anyone about, and you'd never heard anything about it, and then you hear it on the show, and I'm sure it reaffirms that you're not going bananas, but it's also kind of got to be chilling. I can only imagine the same thing as you're reading it in a book, especially back then, because it wasn't as openly known. Correct, right? Like it wasn't as big a deal as it was, as it is now. As easy to find stories and channels on YouTube and movies and all, you know, that didn't exist. So imagine opening it up and reading that and then realizing what he's reading is exactly what you've seen, or what he's writing about is exactly what you've seen. And then finding out, oh, this guy thinks it's a UFO. Oh man, what if it was? So Graves freaks out, gets in the book, starts going through it, comes across Timothy, right? So he gets a hold of Timothy and like, bro, I saw this. They get together and start talking about it. It's not until that moment, it seems like Graves has a perspective shift, not about the UFO, but about the fact of how it worked out. That his buddy Sailor that owned the land was retired military. And he believes that it might have been him that not only saw the crash, found the crash, and reported to his military buddies, y'all need to get up here and get a hold of whatever this is. Get out in front of this. We had another one go down, right? Mr. Graves recalls seeing flatbed trucks leaving the area with things on them, right? And finding out more about, well, maybe there were beings on this thing. There's been stuff written about there being a legend in the area, a local legend, you know, and those are the best, right? The ones where everybody in the town, the locals will tell you, like, everybody outside thinks this, but all the locals think this. Well, all the locals believe that there was a, there's a story of a local man that came across this craft, found these little beings, and stored them in his freezer, his big chest freezer, until the military could get there. Well, it's now believed that it, if Sailor is believed to have been part of it, that this was the man, and that all of this was taking place at the times that Mr. Graves was actually there. Every bit of this went on that morning. That's the reason that Sailor was late. That's the reason it was already locked down. Everything was been safe. Everything had been taken care of, and that they weren't allowed to go over there. What are the odds of all that crazy stuff lining up at the exact moment, right? The exact moment. Well, here's another weird one. If you're not aware, this is a really strange one too, that took place in Laredo, Texas. Now, again, just like down through Arizona, New Mexico, back in 1948, Laredo wasn't like Laredo today, right? Like it was, I mean, it's, you go into that part of Texas and down through Mexico and like that, it's still pretty wide open, right? Like it's still pretty vast. Now imagine back then how wild it was. So the story goes on it that there was a U.S. military fighter plane, more than one, actively pursuing something, racing through the sky. What they were pursuing was a silver disc, and that this thing was juking as it was moving through the sky, getting a little speed down through there. It was reported to be 90 foot across and made of a gleaming silver metallic material, exactly like the ones we heard from Roswell, the stuff that we get all the time, a lot like the ones that we saw fly past the pilot window as the model videoed it, gleaming flight of the navigator type stuff, right? That's what we're seeing. It's funny, but that's what we're seeing. So, story goes that while in pursuit, this thing ditched it. It went down. I don't know if it was shot down. You can hear some say it was shot. Some say it lost control. Some say it just nosedived right into the ground like it was intentionally diving in. Who knows? Either way, whatever really happened, the military base in San Antonio scrambled their retrieval team. Remember us talking about the retrieval team? I'm sure it was put in place in certain areas all through the Southwest, if you will, to find these things, because this seems to be the flap of where we start having stuff, right? So what do? They rush it there. They load it on the trucks. They get it all loaded up. It is there that one of the strangest things that may have ever happened as far as these little things is they start talking about a badly burned body, and that they believe that the body on this thing, whatever it was on this craft, whatever this thing was non-human. They were like, look, I don't know. I've never seen a burnt body. I hope to never see a burnt body, but I know it changes. I know it, everything changes. So what I'm saying is you would have to really know your stuff if you were to be able to look at something and go, that's not made by man. That's easy to see, or at least not that we know of. And that's not a man, right? So that being said, you're like, well, I mean, I guess it could have been an alien. I don't know. I don't know what that whole deal. But I do know this, that something very, very similar to what happened in Laredo happened in Del Rio, 3 hours away, in the 1950s. In the 1950s, there was a fellow in the Air Force named Robert Willingham. He's retired now, of course, and he retired as a colonel. He was the man that gave chase to the UFO that was downed in Del Rio. He saw it crash. The story he tells is that because of the Cold War, because of everything that was building up at this time, they were on a simulated bombing run. So they're practicing, right, as they're flying. Him, along with other members of the squadron that he was in that time, said they saw on the horizon a bright orb of light, which is probably the sunlight reflecting off of this silver thing, right? He says this thing is moving. He estimates, and of course, we always go back to trained observers. I don't know how they do it. I don't know if you can't really tell by looking. Is there something, you know, is there some trick? I don't know. But you got to be used to moving pretty quick and seeing stuff. And if you're used to flying faster or driving faster or anything faster than everybody else, usually you learn speed pretty well because your body gets accustomed to higher speeds, right? The blur in your eyes, your reaction times have to sharpen. Well, Colonel Rillingham said that what he saw in the sky, he estimated to be moving at just over 2,000 miles an hour. And that while moving, this thing could perform precise movements unlike anything that they could perform in their aircraft. Nothing. We hear that to this very day, right? Back then to this very day, these things have always been able to move like this. These are those little things that they talk about that make sense today. The video that we've seen, the other lines come out. You're like, well, if it's man-made from the 1955 to now, we don't know about it yet. Like, you're still keeping it hidden, or you don't really know, right? So he talks about all the stuff that it could do. At one point in time during the chase and watching it go, which it doesn't really sound like it was much of a chase, it started heading back towards Del Rio. That's whenever Willingham was put on it, right? Get on it, follow it. I want to know what's going on. He jumps in there after it. They start going. It doesn't say that it was traveling 2,000 miles an hour while he's chasing it. What it does state, though, is that it begins to wobble in the air as if it's losing control. And it starts an erratic flight. And he watches it continually do that as it's falling in altitude. Something along the lines caused it, whatever it was, to wobble, to go out of sorts. It crashes into the riverbank of the Rio Grande, bounces and skidding like you would see in the movies. And they say it comes, he says, it comes to the rest, the bottom of a small hill. Now, it has been thrown out that maybe the problem these craft have is because of Earth's gravity. You remember Bob Lazar talking about how they fly in the gravity, and we see it in the photographs of how it flies bottom first in the gravity. That Earth has such strong gravity that they think maybe there's something, maybe it has to do with the ley lines. They're not sure, but maybe there's a problem. It's what's caused some of these crashes as they lost control of it. Now, the colonel goes on to saying that this craft, of course, was bright, shiny silver, right? So it makes sense. It's falling into everything else. He said it was down there. It appeared to be broken open and you could see down inside it. And he says that he saw three non-human entities inside of this thing. And from what he could tell, and I'm, of course, I don't know how fast flying over, right? But what he could tell was that two of the three were bad off. Like, it was going to be real bad. And then, of course, the story goes that it was cordoned off. They did the same thing. They did the retrieval. They came in. They found the bodies. They loaded them up, took them with them, and everything just like normal. Which is what we would expect, right? You would expect, all right, boom, they grab that one and they go off still down there. And if it happened in 48 and then it happened again in 55, well, I'm sure if San Antonio probably only got better at doing it. But I want to go back real quick. I want to read you a little excerpt about the Tomato Man. This come from Mr. William Steinman's book, UFO Crash at Aztec. This is a little part of that book where he talks about what might have been found there in Laredo. Listen to this. It says, much has been written about the strange body found in the Laredo UFO crash. He's been decisively called Tomato Man by detractors in these cases. The fact is, the body was reportedly photographed in the remains of an unidentified flying object that came down in a crash collision with the ground at a point near the Sabine River in about 30 miles southwest of Laredo, Texas, but across the border in the Mexican state of Nuevo León on the 7th of July, 1948. U.S. Secretary of State General George C. Marshall reportedly intervened directly with the Mexican government and obtained permission for U.S. Army personnel to recover the remains of the U.S. special test vehicle that had gone out of control and crashed in Mexico. Colonel John W. Bowen, the United States Air Force retired, then Provost Marshal at Carswell Air Force Base, y'all, here in Fort Worth, was sent over to take immediate charge of cordoning off and controlling the area. The bulk of the residue was picked up on the big Army transporter trucks and hauled to San Antonio Air Depot for study. But before removal, a special photographer with a high security clearance was flown down from White Sands Missile Test in New Mexico in a lightweight, special, slow-flight photo liaison airplane. The photographer was loaded at 2050 to prepare to be airlifted to the site of a top-secret airplane crash. At 2130, they were picked up by an Army L-19 Bird Dog airplane. Five team members and equipment and were flown directly to the crash site, arriving at about 2:15 a.m. As they circled the floodlighted site before landing, they could see the remains of a fairly large circular craft still smoldering and smoking some 12 hours after the crash. They landed on a makeshift runway about a half mile from the crash site and were picked up and driven right to the crash scene by an Army truck. Commander Smith, a pseudonym for the U.S. Naval Intelligence Officer from the U.S. Embassy in Mexico City who accompanied the Mexican authorities to the site, told them to photograph everything in as much detail as possible. And that's where I'm going to leave it. I put that out there for this. If you go through all the work to report on this and send this liaison officer down and all of these photographs, it would make sense if you were doing it for a test vehicle. All of that makes sense, every bit of it. That this is one of your secret test vehicles and this is what you're trying to do and you want to make sure you document everything to see what might have caused the crash. But if this is a secret test vehicle, do you want the Mexican military knowing it? Do you want the liaison in Mexico to bring his buddies up? Right? You're going to bring all your buddies up down there. Oh, yeah, let me go get all these guys and bring them up. Do you even want that? I understand you have to deal with them, but wouldn't you say it wasn't a test vehicle? Wouldn't it be easier to say it was a small civilian craft? They had no reason to come look at it. It's something you're just going to get out of their hair, right? You could have even made it somewhat important. You could have made up anything other than it being a test craft. Yeah, the test craft works, but then you're bringing people to it. Well, now it doesn't work. Now that stuff starts falling apart. Or did the Mexican authorities know? We're getting out there. We're coming out there. Something's going down. We want to know what's popping. And then you go to the trouble to send this photographer out there to document everything. And like I said, you can go online now. You can pull it up. You can see the photographs. You'll see how strange it looks. Make up your own minds. I hope you enjoyed that. That little strange little UFO flap down here in the desert. The desert UFO craziness that we all come to enjoy. And I just wonder how many of them have happened around the world that we're unaware of. How many of them have possibly happened over the Amazon, right? That we never found. Maybe they're out there. Or over the Sahara Desert or over the oceans. We already know they're diving in there. Well, if they crash over land, surely they might crash in the water. Everything does, right? Crashing is crashing. It doesn't know what's below it. It just knows it doesn't work anymore. So I don't know. I enjoyed digging into it. I hope y'all enjoyed it as much as I did. Let's take a quick break.
We'll pick Mr. Fizzy's brain when we get back. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
To modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
All right, there we go. Some crazy UFO flaps. And some strange things, strange signs. Look, some of it might have been hoax, like they talked about. We don't know. There's so many of them out there. And that's literally like that little window of a few years in this area. But like Kyle pointed out before, they're everywhere. Start looking, there are way more than we were ever told. And then now they've kind of, if it's not for shows like ours and all the others, they kind of would have fallen away.
Yeah, and the government has released some photos and some videos, but that's like, man, the tiny tip of the iceberg. Yeah, that's nothing compared to what they have. And I've heard that the image quality on stuff they have is, I mean, what they've released is a joke. I love it. I love all these cases. I don't know how many stories we've talked about where people had an odd sighting of a UFO or an odd encounter with an extraterrestrial being. Then men in black or just men in government suits. Somebody shows up. They confiscate all their materials, their videos, their phone, the photographs. They make them sign NDAs. They threaten them with their life. They follow them. They harass people for years and years and years and years. Why would they be doing all of that if none of this happened, right? Because it is happening. People are seeing things. People do have photographs. People do have videos of odd things. And it seems like it's starting to open up, but I think a lot of people are scared for their life. So they just... They don't share it with anybody.
There's a part of it that always I think about and doing this flap, doing this, talking about this, and then you bringing up before the segment, you talking about that in Brazil, there was actually an Air Force agent landed to pick up, you know, to be involved in this from America. I've often wondered what kind of network must have been put in place in order to find out about this kind of stuff. Not because the recovery, when they show up, everything is well handled, well executed, and very quick, very thorough. And they're in there, get it and gone.
Yeah.
So they draw less attention. And that's not even in the States. That's in other countries like in Mexico, like Brazil. But who is in place down there to let the Americans know that they have something?
I don't know, but there was a phone call made and the U.S. government showed up.
Yes.
And landed at an airport, which was restricted airspace. They weren't supposed to be able to land there. They were allowed to land. They were only on the ground for an hour. There was something loaded in and it took off.
And that
they probably kicked back to the government. They probably have some kind of deals. Like, look, if this is for every country. This is a private email chain only between all the leaders. They're like, look, if anything crashes, holler at you. We'll give you $500 billion.
Yeah, we'll take care of whatever it is. We'll cut you in on the thing, but we've got all of them now.
Yeah, I think
so. So we know more about it than other countries, so we'll be able to figure it out faster.
Well, and there's so many cases where just like the destroyer that was keeping up with the Tic Tac UFOs and stuff, Lieutenant Fravor and everybody that the pilots were seeing, and everybody's seen those tapes of the Tic Tac and the Steady Go or whatever it's called. But anyways, they said that that somebody arrived on a helicopter. And they took all the tapes from the planes, from the radars. They took it all and they left. So somebody is collecting this data. And several times there's been sightings where pilots have talked about what they've seen. The admiral, whoever the head guy on the ship, he listens to, he wants to hear the story. And when they tell it, he acts like it's not surprising to him.
Yeah.
As if they're like, oh, yeah, we know exactly what that is. I'm not going to tell you. It's above your pay grade.
Yeah.
But I know what you saw.
I've seen it. I've been involved in, yeah, all the stuff down there. It's just like no big deal.
Well, I think even on the guy, James Fox, that was on Joe Rogan's show, mentioned that there was some kind of sighting where, and there's a high up guy in the military was shown the body, and he didn't seem surprised. He didn't seem shocked. He looked like, oh, yeah, I know what that is. Just didn't seem surprised by it at all.
I think of it like this. We've all worked in large places or, you know, been involved in large offices at one point or another. And it, you know, doesn't always happen. But when you find out that there is adultery going on in the office, right, it always shocks you at first because you're like, man, you know, and some of them you might have seen, you know, but then there's always these things that happen no matter what it is, whether it, when you find out about two people or any kind of big secret that had been kept that where you had worked for people you'd been around your, you know, the majority of your adult life if you've worked there. And then there's a big secret and you're like, man, I never saw that. I think about that at a higher level. When you start getting in where you have power and money, like we all know, you can keep a lot of secrets.
Yeah.
I just wonder what kind of inter-office like club is doing all of this under the guise of something else. Because we know that's what it is.
Absolutely.
The MK Ultra stuff, we know all of this stuff is done, but it's got to be involving, like you said, the whole world. The whole, there's people in the right places.
The
that
Illuminati.
Have to be involved.
There really is like a secret group, though, of the high ups that know.
The just Pentaveret.
Like in, just like in the X-Files. Remember? It was that small group that knew about what was going on. I think that that is reality. There's got to be somebody that's collecting all this data. There's somebody that's privy to all this information. I mean, right before the Pentagon was hit on 9/11, wouldn't they? There's like $16 trillion unaccounted for dollars.
And another building went,
I mean, like that's what it's being funded. It's being done.
It there's something going on, and we all know it, but we can't prove it, right? That's what's so great. It's like grabbing smoke.
I think when they release stuff like the Tic Tac video, when they release stuff like the Chinese balloon, it's misdirection. They're trying to get you to look over here because they're doing something over there, right? Just like any good magician, the other hand's doing something while you're following the other one, right? It's misdirection. That's what it
know.
Is.
I feel I believe that, but I feel like they're opportunists.
Sure.
I believe that they take advantage of all kinds of crazy stuff to release other stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just to keep it in turmoil.
And you can see sometimes when it doesn't work, when it fails.
Oh, right? Yeah.
You're like, oh, they tried to do that, but it didn't work.
Didn't work out. Look, I got something I got to read to you because the headline grabbed me.
Sure.
All right. It says, my dad was replaced by a cloaked reptilian doppelganger. All right.
This is
Pop-Up.
I'm not 100%. Laughing. I'm not saying it didn't happen.
This is Pop-Up. This is him.
I'm just saying that is a very nice title.
Pop-Up.
Go ahead. Of course, I'm intrigued.
Right here.
Interested. I mean, how could you not be?
So this is what it says. The incident happened back in 1995 when I was 15 years old. It was very horrible. I witnessed two guys that may have been like government agents or some other secretive governmental agent. They kidnapped my dad and left someone in his place that looked just like him. I later found out that person left behind was a reptilian cloaked as a human. This person became rather rude to me as time went on. However, he talked with me and could even heal with his bare hands. He told me that we humans were looked down upon as sheep. And he knew that I had witnessed the two agents kidnapping my dad and said that I was next. I became very scared. He had me taken to a place against my will and met with what looked like special forces group who forced me to sign paperwork against my will. And the guy who looked identical to my father was standing there. I was spying on him one night and saw what he looked like. Had a snake's tongue come out of his mouth. I later discovered he was reptilian. A very short human who looked like a midget was helping him. I think he was a gray cloaked human. I heard them talk in English, but then started talking in an alien language, which sounded kind of Far Eastern. Yes, I am here to tell you they can cloak and simulate our world undercover. My real father, the one I saw whisk away, was retired military, and I often suspected him of doing something or being involved with the government or doing something secretive that may have led to all this happening to me. I also found implants that feel like something under my skin. One was upside down triangle or diamond shaped. They also stabbed me and then heated me with their eyes, which left a very weird scar on my leg. I never told anyone as I was so scared of how these entities seemed to be able to operate with impunity and like nothing could stop them. They also conducted very horrible activities and what seemed like mental brainwashing experiments on me. After all these years, I'm still scared to this day. But I believe it was time to come forward. I just wonder what happened to my real father.
Boy, that is a tale. Like, I've heard some doozies. That's a good one. I, too, have felt some implants before. It was at Fantasy Ranch.
Oh, here we go. My deal is this with this story. I'm not saying it's not true at all. What I'm saying is, if something like that was to happen to you at 15 years of age.
Yeah.
And it was all true. Let's say every bit of it was true. Who would believe you?
Nobody.
Exactly. Right? It's the exact same thing. They'd be a couple of knuckleheads laughing at you years later. Right? Because that's the deal, is who would believe you? That's.
And if you were going to infiltrate a society on a different planet, like what a good way to do it, right?
Oh, yes.
Is to figure out what their tendencies are, how they talk, how they act, and then, like, you know, disguise yourself.
Live among them for a long time. Bring it in slowly where you could learn everything about them, especially if you knew they were had a proclivity to violence, right? Like, if they leaned towards to be a little bit extra and violent, you'd want to make sure that you could figure out how to counteract that before you went ahead and made your full push for takeover V-style.
Yeah, look, I can appreciate the hustle by these reptilians and stuff, but I don't like them saying that we're sheep. You know, it's kind of scary. Like, what? We're like nothing to them? We're just putty in their hands?
Well, and what are they doing? Like, what did they do with the dad?
Yeah. Maybe that was just a deadbeat dad, and it was like a good way to get out of it. It's like, no, son, I didn't abandon you and your mother. I was taken by reptilians and led away.
Right? Or it would be like, look, I had a choice between hang out with y'all or go into the, like, into the galaxy and explore
the jump room.
Remember? And I'm going to be like, yeah. Dude, that is some of my favorite stories. I'm not going to lie.
The guys are space marines,
yes,
and they go through a jump room.
110,000%, yes.
Fighting battles on planet Mars and stuff.
I love those stories. Love them.
Yeah, I like those too.
But just like that. There's so many stories with all these alien encounters and these alien doppelgangers and these shapeshifters and all that that have been around for years. And as of recent time, within the last few years now, we know for a fact that there are alien craft visiting this planet on the reg.
Oh, yeah.
That being said, like I've said a million times, man, you have to look at everything that was reported differently now.
You absolutely have to keep your eyes up. Pay attention to what's going on. You might have a cool sighting of your own. And if you do, please share it with us. You can email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD. Before we get out of here, let's thank our wonderful sponsors, ExpressVPN. So if you want to go incognito and protect your privacy, and you want to secure yourself with the number one rated VPN, you got to visit expressvpn.com/expanded and get 3 extra months for free. That's expressvpn.com/expanded.
And if y'all want to save some money and get you a new wireless plan for about $15 a month, okay, and get it shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/expanded. That's right. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/expanded.
That's about all the time we have for this episode, folks. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.